This Mishnah completes the description of the dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash, and in particular the Azorah, the main courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. From the northern side to the southern side, the width of the courtyard was 135 amas wide. Hakevesh v'amizbeach shishmushtayim. The large ramp leading up to the Mizbeach, as well as the Mizbeach itself, altogether took up a space of shishmushtayim, 62 amas. Although both the Mizbeach and the ramp are accorded as having a length of 32 amas each, so really altogether that should be 64 amas. But that's because part of the Mizbeach, as we learned earlier on in the Masechta, the bottom of the Mizbeach was wider than the top of it. So the 32 amas length of the ramp is talking about the top part of the ramp, which would be touching the actual walls of the Mizbeach, but that was the wall of the Mizbeach which was inwards. It was further inwards than the base of the Mizbeach, and that takes account of those extra 2 amas. Min ha-Mizbeach la-Tabo'is shemenesh amas, there was a gap of 8 amas in between the Mizbeach and the 24 rings, which were attached to the ground, used for keeping an animal still whilst slaughtering it for a korban. Mekom ha-Tabo'is, the area where the actual rings were placed, esrim ba-arba, that took up a length of 24 amas. Min ha-Tabo'is ha-Shulchanos arba, there was a distance of 4 amas between that area of the rings and the marble tables on which they would place the different limbs of the animal which was being brought as a korban, as a sacrifice, and they would wash them. At least a certain amount of the limbs they would wash on those tables. And the Mishnah does not record the length that the actual tables took up, and we'll come back to that towards the end of the Mishnah. But for now, the Mishnah continues with the calculation. When Hashulchanos v'lel ha'nosin arba, there was a distance of 4 amas in between the marble tables and the short pillars to which the animal was attached and hung down from a hook which came out of those pillars whilst the animal was being taken apart. From those short pillars to the wall of the courtyard was a distance of 8 amas, and remaining, the remaining distance, which is 25 amas remaining of the 135, that was split between the area which was in between the ramp of the Mizbeach and the wall of the courtyard, as well as the area of the mini pillars themselves, how much space that took up. And according to the way we're going to learn the Mishnah, also included in this remaining 25 amas is the area that the tables, the marble tables, actually took up. And they were 4 amas long, and therefore we remain with 21 amas left for that area in between the ramp of the Mizbeach and the wall, and the area which was taken up by these mini pillars. So 21 divided by 2 would be 10.5, and indeed the area taken up by those mini pillars was 10.5 amas, as well as the area in between the ramp of the Mizbeach and the wall of the courtyard. Also over there was a distance of 10.5 amas. Mishnah Gimel, Sheish L'Shach Tzoy Ba'Azora, there were 6 chambers situated in the main courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, and they were all situated in the first part of the courtyard, on the sides, of course. But the first part, way before one would reach the actual building of the Beis HaMikdash, at an earlier stage in the courtyard, on the sides, were situated these 6 chambers. Shalosh Batzofein, 3 on the northern side, which if you're facing towards the building, you're facing towards the more inner part of the Beis HaMikdash, so that would be on your right side, that's the northern side of the Beis HaMikdash, Shalosh Badorim, and 3 on the southern side, to the left. Shabbat Sofein, the 3 chambers which were on the northern side, on the right side of the Beis HaMikdash, Lishkas HaMelach, the chamber of salt, which the Mishnah will describe in a moment, Lishkas HaParva, the chamber of Parvo, who was the name of a particular person, Lishkas HaMedichim, and the chamber of washing up, Lishkas HaMelach, the chamber of salt, Shom HaYinosin Melach LaKarban. That's where they would place and store salt, which would be used for salting different parts of the Karbanis, of the sacrifices which are offered up on the Mizbeach. There's a requirement to add salt to them before they are burnt on the Mizbeach. Lishkas HaParva, the second chamber, named after the person who built it, called Parva, Shom HaYimolchin Oyos Kodshim. That's where they would add salt to the animal hides, the skins of animals which are being brought as karbanes. And as well as that, V'al Gaga, on the roof, on top of this chamber, was an area used by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur in order to go to the mikveh to immerse himself and purify himself, which he had to do 5 times over the course of Yom Kippur. 4 out of 5 of those times, it is learned from Pesukim that he had to do so in an area which had the sanctity and the level of holiness of the courtyard itself. In general, throughout the year, nobody ever had to go to the mikveh inside the courtyard itself. However, here there was a requirement to go to the mikveh inside the courtyard. And since the roof of this chamber had the sanctity of the courtyard, the mikveh was over there, and that's where he would immerse himself in this body of water in order to purify himself. And thirdly, in the chamber of washing up, that's where they would wash up the inner parts of animals being brought as korbanos. There's a discussion which parts of the korban and which types of korbanos they would wash up over here, which animals they would wash up on the marble tables, which were in the courtyard itself. Be it as it may, the Mishnah ends off, and there is a ramp which goes from the chamber of the washing up, leading up to the roof on top of the chamber of Parva, which is where the Kohen Gadol would go to the mikveh on Yom Kippur. Mishnah Dalet, Shabadoroim, the 3 chambers which were on the southern side of the courtyard, on the left side, Lishkas HaEitz, the chamber of wood, Lishkas HaGoyla, literally the chamber of the exile, and Lishkas HaGozis, which was another unique chamber in which the Sanhedrin, the major court, the major Beis Din, sat and they met there and they judged different cases. And Mishnah will now describe these 3 chambers in further detail. Lishkas HaEitz, the chamber of wood. For the second time in this Masechta, the Mishnah says, Amar Rabbi Elez ben Yaakov says, Shachachti me'ezah mishameshes. I've forgotten what this chamber was used for, what the purpose of this chamber was. Rabbi Elez ben Yaakov is the author of this Masechta, and over here he says that I can't actually remember what this was used for. Abba Shol says, he clarified and recorded that Lishkas Kohen Gadol, it was the chamber of the Kohen Gadol. What are you referring to? The Mishnah at the beginning of Maseches Yuma tells us that a week before Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol would enter the Beis HaMikdash and remain there for the duration of that entire week in order to avoid him becoming impure, becoming Tomei, which would prevent him from being able to perform the service on Yom Kippur in the Beis HaMikdash. So he would sleep in this chamber. And this chamber was literally behind the other 2 chambers. Now, it doesn't really mean it was behind them, but it means that it was the one which was furthest out, furthest sort of towards the inner part of the courtyard, towards the building, towards the Heichal, and it was further outwards to the north than the other 2. Meaning, at the beginning of the courtyard, there would be the Lishkas HaGozis, and beyond that, along the length of the courtyard, were the other 2 chambers, and they were really next to each other. So that means one of them would have been further outwards towards the north, and that is the one which was the Lishkas HaEitz, this chamber where the Kohen Gadol would be, and that's why it's considered to be outwards and sort of behind the other 2. Now we're going to see that the Lishkas HaGozis, which was where the main court, the Sanhedrin, would sit, that was a much larger room than the other 2 chambers. However, the Gag Shlosh Don Shaveh, the height of the roof of all of these chambers was equal. Only the inner dimensions were possibly different, the length and the width of those chambers. Lishkas HaGoyla, the 2nd chamber, literally translated to be the chamber of the exile. Shom Hoya Bo Kavua, there was a fixed pit, a fixed well of water, Bahagalgal Nosnalov, with a wheel attached to it, Umishom Aspik and Mayanochal Azara, and from using that well, they were able to provide fresh water for everybody in the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash using this wheel as a mechanism of getting the water. And this well was built by those who came up from the exile when they rebuilt the 2nd Beit HaMikdash, and that's why this chamber is called the Chamber of the Exile. And finally, the 3rd chamber was Lishkas HaGozis, the Lishkas HaGozis, which was the chamber that Shom Hos HaSanhedrin Gedolah Shel Yisrael Yesheves, the great big Sanhedrin, the biggest court of 71 judges, the leading court of all of the Jewish people, that's where they sat, amazingly, in this area of the Beis HaMikdash complex, Vidona Esakuhuna, and they would pass judgments about Koyanim. Of course, they would judge many different cases, but their most common case that they had to judge and rule upon was when Koyanim would come to serve in the Beis HaMikdash for their first time. Their lineage had to be examined, and it has to be confirmed after much investigation that indeed they were fully valid Kohanim and fit to perform the service. They didn't have any blemishes in validating them. And this was something which they had to do daily, and it was done by this big Sanhedrin who sat in the Beis HaMikdash. The Kohen Shenim Zavei Psul, a Kohen was found to be disqualified, and he wasn't actually a real Kohen with full pure lineage. Upon finding out, Lovish Shechorim, who would wear black clothes, Misativ Shechorim, and wrap his head up in black, and then V'yetzor Horichloi, he would leave the Beis HaMikdash and go towards his house, mourning over finding out this fact, V'shalonim Zavei Psul. On the other hand, a Kohen who was not found to be disqualified, Levish Levonim, he would wear white clothes, Misatev Levonim, and wrap his head up with white material as a sign of joy, that he was found to be fit to perform the service, and that he was going to perform the service in the Beis HaMikdash for the first time. Nichnas Mishamishim Echav HaKohanim, he would enter into the Beis HaMikdash and begin to serve, together with his fellow Kohanim, the Yom Tov HaYoisim, which we're going to understand to mean that the Sanhedrin, this major court, would make a Yom Tov, an entire festive day, on a day that no Kohen, no descendant of Aaron HaKohen, was found to be invalidated or disqualified from being a Kohen. And this is what they would say, Baruch HaMokim Baruch Hu, blessed is Hashem, he's surely blessed, that no disqualification or invalidation was found amongst the descendants of Aaron HaKohen, or Baruch Hu. And Hashem is blessed, Shebochar ba'Aaron v'avonov la'amud l'shoris lifnei Hashem b'beis kodesh HaKodashim, that he chose Aaron and his descendants to stand in service in front of Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash, of which includes the Kodesh HaKodashim, the innermost part of Beis HaMikdash, and really the entire Beis HaMikdash is extremely holy. And such a day was a big day of rejoicing. Solik Maseches Midas Mazel Tov. We begin the final Masechta of Seder Kodshim, Maseches Kinim. Kinim literally means bird nests, the plural for ken, which is a bird's nest, although it also refers to a pair of birds, because a classic bird nest contains two birds, and because any bird korban, any sacrifice which comes from a bird, always is bought of two birds. And there are two different birds which are valid to be bought as a korban, a tor and a ben yoina, two different types of doves. And there are a number of cases in which the Torah obligates somebody to bring a korban of two birds. One classic example which the Mishnah will focus on and usually bring as the classic example is a woman who gives birth. There are a number of other cases as well that one is obligated to bring such a sacrifice, but the focus of this Masechta is not when one is obligated to bring such a sacrifice, and it's also not focused on how the korban, the sacrifice of the birds, is offered up. That was already discussed in great detail in Masechta Zevachim, the first Masechta of this Seder. The focus of the Masechta is what should be done in a case where birds which have been designated as korbanos, as sacrifices, get mixed with other birds which have either been designated as korbanos or have been invalidated. And the Masechta is laid out sort of with the first perek being an introduction and talking about more simple cases where birds get mixed up, and then the next two parakim talking about slightly more complicated cases, but all based on the rules which are set out in the first perek. Now, as well as one being obligated in certain scenarios to bring two birds as a korban, as a sacrifice, one is also able to voluntarily bring a korban of birds. And once again, he would need to bring two birds, he can't just bring one. And it's important to note that whenever one brings a korban of two birds, a pair of birds, known as a ken, he needs to bring two of the same birds. Remember, there are two different types of birds, a tor and a ben yoina, different types of doves. One is not allowed to bring one tor and one ben yoina, rather either one brings two torim or two bnei yoina. There is a fundamental difference between a ken, a pair of birds which are bought as a obligatory korban, for example, that of a woman who gives birth, and the pair of birds, the ken, that a person voluntarily brings as a korban. If he's bringing it as an obligation, so one of the birds is a korban oila, which is totally burnt on the mizbeach, and one is a bird korban chatas, and only part of that animal is burnt on the mizbeach, and the rest is eaten. And there are a number of differences between a bird korban oila and a bird korban chatos. The main difference which we're concerned about for the sake of this Masechta is in terms of applying the blood of that bird to the mizbeach. because the blood of a bird korban chatos must be applied to the lower half of the mizbeach, whereas the blood of a bird korban olam must be applied to the top half of the mizbeach. There was a red line which surrounded the mizbeach horizontally to indicate where the two halves, the top half and the bottom half of the mizbeach, separated. And if one applies the blood of a korban chatos to the top half of the mizbeach, then the entire korban is invalidated. And likewise, if one applies the blood of a bird korban oila to the bottom half of the mizbeach, that would also invalidate the entire korban. And because of that, if a korban chatos gets mixed up with a korban oila, one is not able to bring to offer up either of them. In case he ends up applying the blood of the korban chatos to the top half, which he's not supposed to, and the blood of the korban oila to the bottom half of the mizbeach, which he's also not supposed to. On the other hand, a voluntary korban of a ken, of a pair of birds, is always going to be korbanos oila. Both of the animals, both of the birds, are totally burnt on the mizbeach, and their blood needs to be applied to the top half of the mizbeach. Begins the masechta, chatos o'if nasis lamata. A bird korban chatos' blood needs to be applied to the bottom half of the mizbeach, chatos behema lamala. Whereas a korban chatos which comes from a larger animal, like a sheep, for example, the blood of that animal needs to be applied to the top half of the mizbeach. This is not a relevant point for our masechta, but the Mishnah, since it's mentioning where the blood of a bird korban chatos is applied, it also discusses where the blood of a korban chatos of a different animal should be applied. On the other hand, oila sa'if, a bird korban oila is the exact opposite. Nasis lamala, its blood needs to be applied to the top half of the mizbeach, whereas v'oila sa'beheima lamata, a korban oila which comes from a larger animal needs to be applied to the bottom half of the mizbeach. Im shina bozeh bozeh, if he changed it in either of the situations, he applied the blood in the wrong place, in the top half instead of the bottom half, or in the bottom half instead of the top half, posel, the entire sacrifice, would be invalidated. Continues the Mishnah, seder kinim kachu, the order, the arrangement of a pair of birds being brought as a korban is as follows. Hachoiva, if it's an obligation, echad chatos vechad oila. One of the two birds in the pair are brought as a korban chatos, and one of the two birds in the pair is brought as a korban oila. On the other hand, benedorim and benedovos, these are two types of voluntary korbanos brought as birds, and the Mishnah in a moment will define the difference between nedorim and nedovos. The point is, however, that they are both voluntary, and therefore, kulon oilos, all of the birds, both of the birds in the pair, in the ken, are brought as korbanos oila. Asks the Mishnah, Ezo neder, what is a neder? Which type of voluntary korban is that? Ha'omer harei olai oila. That refers to somebody who says, I accept upon myself to bring a korban oila. To bring a bird as a korban oila. But at the time of this declaration, he doesn't specify a specific animal, a specific bird. Ve'ezo nedova, what is a nedova? Ha'omer harei zoi oila. That refers to somebody who voluntarily says that this particular bird should be a korban oila that I'm going to offer up. So although even in the case of a neder where somebody didn't specify a bird, he later on needs to specify a bird, obviously. And he would say that this bird I want to designate as the bird that I'm going to use to fulfill my vow to bring a bird korban. However, at the time that he made his original declaration, he did not specify the bird. And the Mishnah asks, Mabe Nedorim Nedovos, what is the difference between Nedorim, where his original declaration was not specific to a particular bird, between that and Nedovos, where his original declaration applied to a specific bird? The answer is, Elashan Nedorim, Mesoi Nignavu Chayav Macharuson. When it comes to Nedorim, which he said, I'm going to bring a bird, he didn't specify which one. So even if the bird which he later on does designate, that bird ends up dying or gets stolen before he brings it as a korban, he is obligated to replace it. Because he has this obligation upon him to fulfill his vow to bring a bird korban. He didn't specify in his original declaration it's going to be a specific bird, and so he still needs to fulfill that declaration. However, nedovos, in a case of a nedova, where originally he only said, I'm going to bring this bird, he never obligated himself beyond that particular bird, and therefore, meso enignavu, if that particular bird, that pair of bird, die or get stolen, enchem bachrusom, he's not obligated to replace them, because he only ever obligated himself to bring those two birds. If he's not able to bring those two birds, then he's not obligated to bring any different birds.